amazing that anyone braved the terrible weather to come. Thank you. Where are you from?
From Glory, Belmont.
Gama.
Oh.
Is that a suburb of Delhi?
Yes.
Where are you from in India?
From Gujarat.
Gujarat, okay. I know. Do you know what we're reading about today? Yes. And we're reading about the 13th chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the 13th chapter describes, in one sense, it's a prelude, it's an introduction to the 14th chapter, which is extremely important. In the 14th chapter, Lord Brahma offers prayers to Krishna. Because Brahma is the most intelligent person in this universe. So his prayers are coming from a very intellectual platform. But because there's a problem with being so intelligent and the most intelligent, and you know what that problem would be? What would tend to happen?
Proud.
Yeah, you tend to get proud. And also, when one is very intelligent, one tends to want to control everything. Those two things, Prabhupada noted that even. That if one's very intelligent, one wants to control everything. And the problem of trying to control everything is that that's Krishna's job. And that if we think that we're going to do Krishna's job, if we think that we are as intelligent, as powerful, and expert as controlling him, then how can we become his devotees? How can we give ourselves to him? We actually give ourselves to him. Actually, we will tend to be his competitor. So in the 14th chapter, Brahma has realized the supreme position of Krishna. And in the 13th chapter, and he also realizes his own insignificance. I could take the incense and put it somewhere else. And he realizes his own insignificance. Now that is very important. And the material world, in one sense, is especially made for this specific purpose, to teach us our insignificance. Every day, what to speak of at the end of our lives, what to speak of so many major events in our life. Every day, we become humiliated by circumstances. But so quickly, the false ego rebuilds itself into, by using methodologies like criticizing others, by saying, oh, next time this is everyone else's fault, or forgetting about things. Or so many, that's what the false ego is very expert at doing. Where there's abhiman, or self-conception, or hankar in Sanskrit. So the false ego rebuilds itself and doesn't take, and the soul loses the opportunity of all the benefits of that the material world has given, which is to dismantle the false sense of self and awaken our true sense of self. And our true sense of self is actually that we are Krishna's. And not only are we Krishna's, Krishna is actually ours. Both of these are who we are. We have a sense of I that is called ahankar. That I am Krishna's, that's actually the true sense of I, the real eternal sense of who I am. Because everyone has a sense of identity, and everyone has a sense of I exist, and here I am. But who is that I? Very few people know what is the true position of that I. So most people in this world think of, when they think of I, they think of the body, or they think of the mind, thinking that this is me. I am my body, and then everything that I can get my hands on, everything expanded from my body, that is what we call mind. And once we invest, and that's a good way to define mind, actually, when we take that sense of I and place it on something that doesn't have anything to do with us, that is called mind. So this is not I iPad, but this is my iPad. And if you touch my iPad, there's going to be great trouble. So I am my body, and although I think I'm my body, but still I say my finger, my toe, my chest, my ear, my head, my heart, my knee. Well, if all these things are my, who is the I that possesses these things? My ribs, my eyes, my nose, my mouth, my fingers, my toes, my, just like we say my dhoti or my kriti or my neck beads. We say in the same way my ears, my nose. But who is the possessor of those things? We say my, but who is the I? So that is the purpose of life, to find out who that I is. Who am I? And from the Bhagavad Gita, and from Bhagavatam, and from Chaitanya Charitamrita, from so many great sages, we understand that we are Krishna's. We are Krishna's servant, Krishna Nityadas. This is who I am. Eternally Nityadas. I am eternally Krishna's, but not only Krishna's, but Krishna's servant. And when we are placed, when we place ourselves, or we make the attempt to place ourselves as Krishna's servant by serving Krishna and by performing the practices of sadhana, then if we achieve actually Krishna's service, that is actually the goal, to achieve Krishna's service. And the Hare Krishna Mahamantra can even be translated. O Lord, O energy of the Lord, please engage me. Because this is who I am. To even know that I'm eternal and that I'm conscious, this is only a partial understanding of who I am. But to know that I exist, and I'm essentially different from the body and all the material circumstances, and have nothing to do with the material world, that's still only a partial understanding of who I am. But then when I understand that I am Krishna's servant, then it is almost complete. And then that sense of being Krishna's servant can develop into our eternal position in relationship with Krishna. What service do we actually perform? So here in this part of the Bhagavatam, we're hearing about, first of all, the cowherd boys who Tam Satam Brahma Sukana Bhutya Dasyam Bhatanam Parada Vitvena Mayasutanam Narapangavena. And then these cowherd boys, Visharu Krita Punja Punja, they have performed spiritually pious activities for countless lifetimes, practically speaking, to have achieved the most fortunate position to be in relationship with Krishna in such an intimate way. They are the most trusted souls. They are with Krishna. They are playing with Krishna. In the spiritual world, or when he comes to this world, they play with him here. So this particular pastime describes how Lord Brahma has seen the cowherd boys, and he's seen Krishna playing, and he's seen Krishna liberate one extremely powerful asura demon named Agasura. And then after seeing Krishna exhibit his powers in this way, and seeing the soul of Agasura come out of his dead body, because it is the soul that keeps the body, makes it appear alive. And then he saw that soul sort of hang in outer space in there. And then when Krishna came out of Agasura after killing him, that soul, effulgent soul, entered into Krishna's body, and Brahma was amazed. And he was still more amazed what he saw next. He saw Krishna and his cowherd boyfriends sitting down by the river, the Yamuna River, and enjoying their picnics. They were eating food brought from home, and they were putting it in each other's mouths, and they were taking, Srila Jiva Goswami describes how one boy took some jasmine flowers. I don't know if you've tasted any jasmine flowers recently, certainly not in this season, but the season is coming. They are so fragrant, but if you eat them, they taste very bitter. And they're not very tasty at all. So one of the boys had one very tasty patty of wada that he had brought from home. And secretly he put some jasmine flower in that wada. And he said, "Krishna, this is so tasty, open your mouth." And he inserted that. And then Krishna went, and everyone began to laugh. And then Krishna got angry, and they would chase the boys, and they all would gang up on one boy for a while, and they would beat him until he cried, or made believe he was crying, and everyone would laugh and play, and just go back to play as usual. So Brahma was watching these things go on, and how Krishna was sitting in the center of all the cowherd boys, and everyone was staring at Krishna, and Krishna was smiling at everyone, and he was satisfying everyone. All the cowherd boys, and while the calves were drinking the water of the Yamuna. Drinking the water of the Yamuna, and the calves were then grazing on the soft green grasses there, and under the shade of the trees. And Brahma was watching this, and then he thought, on one hand, I just saw this boy kill this most powerful agajara. How would you translate agajara? Do you know what? Do you understand a Sanskrit word spoken with a Brooklyn accent? Agajara. Yes, that's what I meant to say. Do you know what it is? How would you translate it? Python. A huge python. So this Agasura was in the shape of a huge python. So Brahma was thinking, on one hand, this boy is so powerful that he's killed this huge python. On the other hand, he's playing with his friends, and they're making him cry, and they're teasing each other and pushing each other and wrestling and feeding each other, and they all love him so much, and they're just playing, and they have a stick over here and a flute over here and a buffalo horn over here. How is it possible that this little beautiful boy wearing a pagri, yes? Turban with a peacock feather coming out of it, and with his hair carefully tucked in, with his curls just coming out just like this in a very beautiful way. How is it possible that this boy with rice and yogurt in his left hand and pickles and sweets and different things in the other hands, between the fingers, and he's going like this and playing with the boys. What's that beeping sound? Something. How is it possible, Brahma thought, that this boy is my master, the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Brahma himself is born of the lotus, coming from the navel of Krishna. But how is it possible that this boy, who is my master, who I performed tapasya for so many thousands of years to know, and who came to me and shook my hand and explained confidential truths about the absolute truth to me. How is it possible this little boy who's wandering in the dust of Vrindavan with no shoes, that he is that same one who is my master, the unlimitedly powerful absolute truth supreme Lord? How is it possible? It's plain. So therefore, he decided, he became bewildered actually. Particularly, Chodupani. Okay, I see. It's okay, Prabhu, it's okay, it's here. How is it possible that he is the Supreme Lord? So he decided to test Krishna, to poke him, so to speak, to see what Krishna would do. And to do that, he wanted to test Krishna. He wanted to test Krishna to see if he was actually my Lord, his Lord. So, bewildered means not understanding the actual situation. So he didn't understand the actual situation that Krishna was the Lord. He had just seen him kill Agasura. He didn't understand. He was bewildered by Maya. And this is one of the purposes of this pastime, is to show us that everyone from Brahma down to the smallest ant in this world is under the influence of Krishna's Maya, illusory energy. And no one, actually speaking, can see things accurately. And that is the meaning of the Sanskrit term Baddha Jeev, or Jeeva Bhuta. The conditioned, Prabhupada would use the term conditioned soul. What is, have you ever heard Prabhupada use that term? Yes. You? What does he mean by that?
Conditions.
He's forced, he's controlled, he's forced to react continuously to so many conditions. Forced. When one is 2 or 3 years old, and each and every one of us were in bodies that were 2 or 3 years old relatively recently. Every one of us is forced to think in a different way than we think now. The body conditions us, forces us, molds us. But not only the body, but so many other things as well. The time of day conditions us. The modes of nature, the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance, according to the particular combination of the modes that control us. We like certain things. We don't like certain things. Certain people really disturb us. Certain people really make us happy. This is all conditions placed upon us, certain seasons. When it's raining, we all know that it's good for the plants, etc., and for the water supply, but so inconvenient, so we're conditioned to having mixed feelings about the fact that it's raining, because it's so inconvenient, and especially if you're in a car, it's so hard to drive along and dangerous too. It's dangerous because when we're on a road, when we're driving a car, it's very dangerous, of course, but we have the ability to not even be there, practically speaking, mentally, when we're driving, because it's so mechanical. So we can be driving along and be on some street in Perth, and our minds can be somewhere else completely. But when it's raining, if you do that, and at night especially, which is, everyone should drive carefully when they go home tonight. We have to concentrate, because the condition of the rain forces us to do that. Otherwise, it's extremely dangerous. So we're conditioned living entities. That means illusion, controlled and illusioned, and not able to see reality as it is. It is not possible for a conditioned soul to see reality as it is. It is possible for someone who loves Krishna to see reality as it is. Illusion or Maya's specific function is to cause a vision not with our eyes, because we don't exactly see with our eyes, we see with our minds, the conceptions of our mind. The specific job of Maya or the illusory energy is to cause us to see things as they are not, meaning as if they had no connection with Krishna. And instead of the connection with Krishna being in our vision, we connect the things with our self, our false sense of self. And we think in terms of, is this enjoyable for me or is this not enjoyable for me? And if it's enjoyable for me, I will attempt to squeeze some pleasure or make some plan. And if it's not enjoyable for me, if my mind decides it's not enjoyable for me, then my mind will also scheme to push it away in one way or another, or become distracted or view something else. So this pastime, Leela of Krishna's, one of the main lessons to be learned is that everyone from the topmost, most intelligent person in existence in this universe is under the influence. What is it? They call it like that. In Australia, they call it drink driving, right? Drink driving, specifically, or drunk?
Drunk driving.
Driving under the influence. So everyone is driving their material bodies under the influence of the illusory energy, and no one is free from this intoxication. No one sees things accurately. Dhiras tatra, you say. Everyone is bewildered in seeing things inaccurately. Dhira means sober. And no one in this world is sober. Everyone is intoxicated by Maya and thinking of themselves as the center of existence and looking at every object to see whether it is meant to give me pleasure. How arrogant. The whole material universe, its existence is to give me pleasure. How arrogant is the conditioned soul? How intoxicated by his sense of importance. How foolish, because obviously the material world will not cooperate with us in this way, and therefore everyone is so frustrated. So Brahma was also intoxicated by the illusory energy, and he could not understand Krishna's position, so he tested Krishna. So now we shall read about what he did. This is text 12. O Maharaj Prakrit, Śrīla Śukadeva Goswami said, while the coward boys who knew nothing within the core of their hearts but Krishna. So this is what it means to be qualified to play with Krishna, to have, like the coward boys, this is what it means, Krita Punja Punja. What's the Vicharu Krita Punja, what's the word right before that? You know? Sakyam, these friends of Sakyam Vicharu Krita Punja Punja. This is the result of countless pious activities, spiritually pious activities, is that they had such a, they had nothing but Krishna in the core of the heart. Just like the wealthiest of persons, when they're trying to achieve their wealth, what is in the core of their heart? That desire for wealth. And if you want to, there's a certain position you can get just by having a job or something like that. But if you really want to succeed in this world, really, really big, really big, and become a billionaire or a multi-billionaire, and have that kind of power, and have everyone smile at you whenever you walk somewhere, and you don't have to pay for anything. That's one of the oddest things about people with so much money. They never have to pay for anything. Everyone says, oh, please, you take this, take that, take that. But if you want to become big like that, in that sense, you have to have nothing but that kind of success in the core of your heart. Practically speaking, you have to be ruthless too. You have to cut other people. You have to have a team of lawyers. If anyone gets in your way, you attack them with your team of lawyers. But these coward boys had achieved the highest position of being with Krishna, and they had nothing but Krishna in the core of their hearts. They didn't have the slightest tinge of any other desire, not the slightest tinge of false ego, not the slightest tinge of the intoxication of seeing anything other than it, as if it was meant for Krishna's pleasure. They had Krishna in the core of their heart. And actually, in the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, it is described how they had Krishna in the core of their hearts. Sadabandhayams. That Krishna keeps them in the core of their hearts. Not only the cowherd boys, but anyone who is a devotee, who keeps Krishna in the core of their hearts. Krishna keeps them in the core of their hearts. That he are swatantra. He is completely dependent. He won't act independently of his devotees, just like the devotees who are pure on this level won't act independently of Krishna. Krishna also doesn't act independently. This is the nature of the sweetness of the relationship that it is possible to have with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with Krishna. So they knew nothing but Krishna within the core of their hearts. They were engaged in eating their lunch in the forest. And while they were doing that, the calves went far away, deep into the forest, being allured by green grass. When Krishna saw, this is Brahma's arrangement, because he couldn't directly affect Krishna or the cowherd boys, but he lured the cows away with his potencies, with his own potencies. But he couldn't actually do that either, because they're there in Vrindavan as Krishna's servant. But Krishna wanted some excitement. So, in Vrindavan, the chief of Krishna's potencies is his Icha Shakti, his potency that fulfills all his desires. So Krishna desired some excitement. So Brahma was allowed by Krishna's Maya Shakti. He was already under the influence of Krishna's Maya Shakti, but he was allowed to, Krishna's Maya Shakti, put the cows, calves, under the control of Brahma. And then Brahma lured the cows out, just like we can become allured. Cows, what's the Sanskrit word for cow? Go. So go is called go because they wander, and also senses, our senses, the eyes, ears, nose, smell, touch, tongue, etc. They're also called go. Same term as cows, because our senses, and the chief amongst the senses is the mind, tends to wander, and it especially wanders when it wants something to enjoy. So the cows, influenced by ultimately Krishna's Shakti, but Brahma's Shakti, indirectly or secondarily. They started wandering because they wanted to enjoy. They were allured by Trina Lobhita. Lobha means greed. They were greedy for the green grasses, the soft green grasses that were. And they left Krishna's company. By Krishna's arrangement, they were allowed to do that. So, when Krishna saw that his friends, the cowherd boys, were frightened, because suddenly the cowherd boys noticed, where are the calves? The calves are gone. They've wandered away. And immediately they became frightened. Do you have any children?
Yes.
How old?
Three and a half years and seven months.
7 months. Wow. Did your 3.5-year-old, she's a girl?
Boy.
Does he tend to wander away? He's very active, yes? So he tends to wander. So sometimes you're doing something and then he wandered away. Did that ever happen to you? And how did you feel? Immediately. So frightened. Why? Because there's love there. So the cowherd boys, they have so much love for the calves. And it's not cattle raising or like that. They love the calves. And they became frightened when they were out of their vision and they couldn't see them. When Krishna saw that his friends, the cowherd boys, were frightened, he, the fierce controller even of fear itself, he said, just to mitigate their fear, mitigate means to remove their fear and lessen their fear, he said, my dear friends, do not stop eating. They were all just peacefully eating. Brahma was watching them and Brahma was doing his mischief. But the boys, they just were playing and eating with Krishna, and the calves wandered away. And then the boys noticed it and they became frightened. Krishna, he said, don't worry, don't even stop eating. I will bring your calves back to this spot by personally going after them myself. And Krishna is the great hero of Vrindavan. He does continuously amazing and wonderful things, and he's going to do something extremely amazing to the extreme in a short while in this chapter. But the cowherd boys, when Krishna said that, because they knew his potency to mitigate all fear, and this is something that devotees must learn if they want to deepen their devotion, that Krishna is the controller of fear itself. And usually what we do in life when we're in a fearful situation, we try to use all our power to remove the fear. So, but ultimately, however much power or potency or ability or influence or wealth or strength we have, it's going to prove itself insufficient. Ultimately, it's going to prove itself insufficient. And it even is only sufficient when Krishna allows it to be sufficient. But the devotees who are deep, they learn when they are in a fearful situation, they take shelter of he who is the fierce controller of fear itself. They take shelter of Krishna. Asya bibhayam. He himself is the fearful element. He is the essence of fear. Even all fear ultimately comes from him. Even. So, the cowherd boys had so much faith in Krishna, so as soon as he said, I'm going to take care of this, don't worry, then their fear stopped. Purport. Here's Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse. In the presence of Krishna's friendship, a devotee cannot have any fear. What do you think about that?
Huh?
What do you mean?
The depth of friendship being such that you fear all things.
It's called Shraddha. Whatever Krishna wants, let it happen. Whatever Krishna sanctions for me, even if it is not tasteful to me, that bitter medicine is just what I need. This cannot be imitated, because very quickly we will find that our imitation is insufficient, is superficial. But this is what it means actually to be a devotee. Gotrate varanam tata means to place oneself completely under Krishna's protection, under Krishna's maintenance, with full faith, and therefore, as they say in Australia, no worries. Bhayam dvitiya abhinaseshatatsyad, from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, 2nd chapter. This verse means that that fear, bhayam, is when we become absorbed in maya, in seeing something other than Krishna and Krishna's mercy in any situation. That's the cause of fear. It's called dualistic vision. Is to see something external of Krishna's mercy. To see something as if Krishna is not there. This is illusion. This is Maya's specific function. To cause a vision where one sees the duality of things as if things had a separate existence other than Krishna. So, Bhayam dvitiya abhinaveshita. Abhinavesha means absorption in things as if they were different from Krishna, but they had a separate existence from Krishna. Like a young child. Did you ever take your boy across a very busy street where there are cars going?
Yeah.
What do you do? What does he do?
Sometimes he wants to just run up, so I have to worry.
Okay, but when he's in good sense, what does he do?
He stick to me.
How does he stick to you?
Hold my finger.
He holds your finger, yes. He holds your finger, he holds on very tightly, and then even though the cars may be going very close, because you're there and he's holding tight, then he has no fear. So similarly, even though a devotee may be in a seemingly dangerous situation, if he holds tightly to, instead of to the lotus finger, but to the lotus feet of Krishna, then he can be fearless even in the most fearful circumstance. And the most fearful circumstance is the time of death. In the time of death, everything that is false means not really us and not really ours, is that it is exposed as false. That's the time of death. And what we really have is shown to be what we really have. Is that clear enough? In other words, if we, all the falsity is exposed, and the realness of a true shelter is also shown to be true. So if we're able to hold on even in the most fearful of all circumstance, to Krishna's lotus feet or to his hand. Just like, what is your boy's name?
Ved.
Ved. What does Ved mean?
Knowledge.
So he's, when he's holding on tightly, he is really Ved. When he's trying to run across the street himself, he's a Ved. Because no matter how cute he is, no matter how expert he is at running, no one can run across the street and survive. It's too dangerous. The cars are, oh. And when the children are so little, they're foolish. They don't see things accurately, so they try to run. So that's exactly our situation, trying to cross the fearful street of material existence without holding on to Krishna's hand. And therefore, sometimes we're in so much illusion we don't even know it's fearful until some car knocks us over, some circumstance knocks us over. Then we say, oh, lament, this wasn't supposed to happen, why did it happen? Fear arises because lack of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, there cannot be any fear, lack of true knowledge. For one who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, this material world of fear becomes hardly dangerous at all. Bhuvam buddhir vatapadam param padam 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 yadipadam natesha. Bhuvam buddhir, the material ocean of fear, becomes very easy to cross by the mercy of the Supreme Controller. This material world in which there is fear and danger at every step, padam padam yad vipadam, is not meant for those who have taken shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. Such persons are delivered from this fearful world. They can cross, just like Ved can cross the street safely, despite the dangerous situation, because he has taken shelter of someone who knows how to cross the Supreme. So that, what to speak of taking shelter of the Supreme Person, who is the all-powerful, all-knowing Supreme Person. And that was what Brahma's illusion was. How can this little boy who's playing and sitting by the Yamuna with the sand and the food and playing with his boyfriends, how could he be that Supreme Controller? So the Prabhupada concludes his purport saying, everyone therefore should take shelter of the Supreme Person who is the source of fearlessness and thus be secure. Security is such an interesting topic. They even call there's a securities exchange. And there's and people, securities. What are securities exactly? Anyone deal in the financial markets of the world? What are securities?
Shares.
That's the same? The same as shares? But which sounds better, shares or securities? Which one has more pull? If you have shares, you'll be secure, right? So you call it the security. They're bluffing. Because they also say the markets are very volatile today. They go up and they go down. Sometimes they say they're like a balloon filled with hot air. They can just go, there's no substance to it, and pop. So are they really secure? Where do people find their security? That's when we look for security where it actually isn't, and imagine that things that don't have the potency to give us security are offering us security. That is called maya or illusion. So everyone just take a moment and just think of what type of things we look to for security. see if they're really secure or not. Can they give us secure? Can they bring us across the fierce ocean of material existence? And then if we actually trust, take shelter of Krishna, trust his lotus feet, there's a completely different experience in the consciousness, actually. When we take shelter of things that don't have the potency to give us security, and take shelter of them as if they do have the potency to give us security, we're always in anxiety. That's the cause of anxiety in this world. The attempt to take shelter of things that are not worthy of taking shelter. Prashana bhima pashyati. The fallible soldiers. And so many other things. I mean, it's like a mobile phone, you know, something like that. Now, how much security is there in a mobile phone? You know, there's a nuclear attack on Perth, and I have my mobile phone with me. But how many people don't feel secure when they leave the house unless they have their mobile phone with them? What to speak of the credit cards or something like that, or what to speak of credit cards. Next text. Oh, it's 8 o'clock. So Krishna said, "Let me go and search for the calves," Krishna said. "Don't disturb your enjoyment." Then carrying his yogurt and rice in his left hand, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, immediately went out to search for the calves of his friends. To please his friends, he began searching in all the mountains, mountain caves, bushes, and narrow passages. Srila Prabhupada's purport, and we'll stop here. The Vedas, Svata Svataro Upanishad 6.8, assert that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has nothing to do personally. Natasya karyam karanam savidyate. Because he's doing everything through his energies and potencies. Parasya shaktir vividaya sriyate. Nonetheless, here we see that he took personal care to find the calves of his friends. He has nothing to do, but yet he's acting. This was Krishna's causeless mercy. Maya dakshena prakriti suyate satsaratsaran. All the affairs of the entire world and the entire cosmic manifestation are working under his direction through his different energies. Still, when there is a need to take care of his friends, he does this personally. Krishna assured his friends, "Don't be afraid. I'm going personally to search for your calves." This was Krishna's causeless mercy. And the point here is that this is how Krishna deals with his devotees personally. Because they deal with him personally, he reciprocates. He deals with them personally. Everyone is under the government. But if there's some difficulty, and the Prime Minister personally takes up your case personally, and what is the difficulty? We'll work it out. This happened to my son. He, by some quirk of fate, he was in India and he was having problems getting his Australian, something with his Australian passport. And he was dealing with the embassy, and they were in Bombay. And they were saying, "Yes, yes, yes," but doing nothing, 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 nothing. And this was months and months and months. And then he had the idea that I'll write to the minister. And he just, in Australia. And he wrote to the minister. Within a week, he was done. I mean, it wasn't, they were just, you get caught in bureaucracy, and the minister had it done. Immediately. Just simple. So when Krishna takes up one's cause, then what is the difficulty? Now the whole art of what we're trying to do in Krishna consciousness is to somehow get Krishna to take up our cause by his causeless mercy. He has causeless mercy, but yet we want him to take up our cause. But there's two different meanings of the word cause there. One is our case, take up our case, our cause of getting across the ocean of material existence into his service, even though we're not qualified. But what can you do when someone's mercy is causeless, that nothing can force it to occur? So this is something to think about. The devotee wants to attract Krishna's attention, and yet nothing, so that Krishna gives his mercy. But there's nothing one can do to make Krishna give mercy. Make in the sense of force. Because otherwise it wouldn't be called causeless. So this is a secret in Krishna consciousness that we will not talk about now. Perhaps next time or another time. We'll stop here. Any questions or comments? Thank you. Yes, they have to either turn down the rain volume control or turn up the voice control. Well, that we certainly can do, but then we have to turn to Krishna. Yeah. That certainly will help.
Example,
you have to.
The example about crossing the road with the child and the parents. And in one sense, the parents are more eager to hold the child at the time of difficulty.
That's what also said there. That he's. If we do our part. And this is really what the issue is. Krishna's part is to give the causeless mercy. But we can't do his part for him. We have to do our part and let him do his part. He has a nature. He's a person, supreme person. So as every one of us are individuals and have individual natures, Krishna also is an individual and has an individual nature. So never mind his part, that's his business, so to speak. But we should focus on what our part in the equation is. One is the holding on tight. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada used to quote his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, saying, don't try and see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will see you. So that's our part. Is acting in such a way that Krishna will see us, but we can't force him to see us. But the longing, the humble longing, or feeling unqualified, is very, very helpful. Krishna's attracted. Do you want to?
I want to ask a question.
Yeah.
When I was just a younger body, and I don't know if it's really gone now. I used to feel afraid that, as you're saying, he's a person, that maybe he didn't like me or I didn't like him. Like, well, you know what you deal with people all the time, some you like and some you don't. And so when you think of a person as a materialist and becoming a spiritualist, you think of him as being relatively some nice and some not nice. How do you kind of, remove that kind of a fear of that?
Which part? The part that he won't like you or the part that you won't like him?
I think both, because they're both interconnected in terms of
okay.
Relationship.
But you can't remove the part that maybe he won't like me, because that's his business.
Yes.
But if your part is to see if you like him, there are specific things that we do to get closer to him, to find out more. Say if there's a person who you hear about, and you think, oh, sounds nice, but I'm not sure if I'm really going to like him. So you ask others who know the person, you hear about him, you begin to associate with him a little indirectly first.
Do you research?
Well, something like that. But of course, we also know in Krishna's case, the research is the same as the person. So the name of Krishna is the same as Krishna. The pastimes of Krishna, they have a potency, the deity of Krishna, the Dham, the holy place, and the devotees, they carry something of Krishna with them. So, and then we have, and on the other side, we know we also find out, aham bija padapita, like a parent, he likes his child. Why? Because he's his child. Not because the child is perfect, but because he's his child. So we hope that Krishna will like us despite our imperfections. So there are things that we can do to become more likable. Also. And things we can do to become less likable. So we try to do the things that make us more likable and not do the things that make us less likable. But knowing that that's all on the superficial level, the conditioned level, Krishna has a relationship with us on a different level. What was that? It's raining. Hare Krishna. Chaitanya, did you want to? Any part of? No, the part that is, the part he likes is the part that's us. The part that we don't like is the part that isn't us. It's more like that. Huh?
The one where we this is my iPad and this is my.
Ah, it's just so tiring being the false me. And what to speak of the mind, what goes on in the mind all the time, trying to convince ourselves that we like ourselves and trying to get everyone envious of us or whatever. Oh, he's really enjoying it. He really has it together.
I just finished reading the Mahabharata, and at the end Krishna says, I'm leaving now, but he says, what you're going to be left with is your mind. He says you have to...
Thanks a lot. That's a New York response, excuse me.
The way to deal with the mind is through knowledge.
Knowledge of Krishna. But in the Bhagavatam, when he says, he leaves, the question is asked in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, what will that all knowledge and religiosity leaves when Krishna departs, like when the sun sets, darkness descends. So Puranarko Dunoditaha, that the Bhagavatam arises like the sun to give light. Dharma Gyanadavi Saha. And Krishna leaves. Krishna Dham Upagate. Huh? So Dhamma Vite, Dhamma Gyana Devi Saha. What's the next one?
Kalo Nashta Vishamaj.
Say this.
Kalo Nashta
Vishamaj. Kalo
Nashta Puranarko Dunoditaha.
So this is Kali Yuga, the age of darkness.
So just have one in our older age and we're kind of...
Of Krishna in one form or another, of the holy names and the books and the devotees and the deities and the Dham. Those are the five panchanga bhakti, five elements of devotional service which will make Krishna most easily approachable. So for you, Where do you find Krishna most?
I used to be in listening to the pastime, just hearing all the time pastime. But now I feel like I need knowledge now. Then the mind's getting older and it doesn't contain it much now.
But just hear. Just hear it. And chant, hear and chant, and hear and chant, and associate with devotees, and hear and chant, and hear and chant. And desire is the most essential part of our moving forward. So even if we can't do something, if we desire to do it, that's extremely helpful. That's not what I meant, but what I'm saying, say if there's one part of the Bhagavatam that describes this, but say if I want to read the Bhagavatam, but I don't have the ability, but that desire is my wealth, Krishna accepts that part. If I want to serve, so he saw. Those are the, well, you were just complaining. You weren't sure. So now, but someone like that. I mean, who else is like that? Who else is like that?
Nice like that.
Well, who else? You know, you with everyone else. No matter what you do for them, they're not satisfied. But with Krishna, even if you desire to do something for them and don't do it, he's satisfied. Good deal, but you can't. Of course, you can't be insincere in your attempt.
Yeah, actually, it's a real reality that who can you please? You know, people are subject to get pleased and becoming more and more complicated.
There's one way to look at it is people are so difficult to please, but the other way to look at it is we don't have the potency to please anyone. And where Krishna, that's the meaning of Krishna being in the center with the cowherd boys, he had the potency to please everyone. And therefore he was in his rightful position in the center. But we don't have the potency to please anyone. So it's not like everyone is wrong about us.
But if we have duties we have to perform in this world, we find that it's always a little bit difficult, whether it's due to our being in the center or the complexities of age that we live in, and Krishna remains so eager to accept us and so eager to accept our
meager offerings.
Yeah.
This is Baba Grahi Janardana. Because he's pleased by devotion, which means basically this sincere attempt at service. Are you tired today? Uh-oh. Are you thirsty or hungry?
No.
No? Are you bored? A little? No. Okay, good. Where did you get such a nice skirt with such a nice trim at the bottom? So nice.
From India.
Oh, where in India? In Mayapur?
Yeah.
You've been to Mayapur?
Yes.
Do you like Mayapur?
Yes.
What do you like most about Mayapur?
One of the Radha Mothers.
Do you like the kirtans that go on? When the devotees are in front of Radha Madhava singing the bhajans in Bengali, can you understand them? Do you think about Mayapur a lot?
Yes.
Do you think about Vrindavan too, sometimes? Do you think about Govardhan Hill? Any other questions or comments? Do you think about the Ganga?
Yeah.
Do you like to bathe in the Ganga?
Yeah.
Too cold?
Yeah,
I also think so. But it's still so nice. I remember the first time I went to Mayapur, I was in so much anxiety because I grew up by the ocean in New York. And I was thinking, oh no, I've heard so much about the Ganga and it's so purifying. What happens if I don't feel purified? What happens if it feels just like bathing in the ocean in New York? I was in anxiety about that. And you know what I did? I went to Mayapur and I bathed in the Ganga. And all my anxiety went away because it was a completely different experience. So powerful. Do you have any Ganga Jal with you?
No.
Oh. Next time, could you bring some Ganga Jal? And we can all take a little bit. Any other questions or comments?
It all sounds, easy, but yet it is so difficult.
Which part? Sounds easy.
The body behind of the feet, especially tight when things are not working our way. And mostly it's all to do with the conditioning, as you said earlier. So all the situations that we really think about Krishna deeply is when we, I am in trouble. So is the idea of, even though I may have all the knowledge that Krishna is supreme personality of the world, but really I would think deeply about him when I am in deep trouble. that time I will think about him all the time.
Now you wonder why Krishna gives you so much trouble.
So should the goal be of reaching a stage of having causeless dependence on Krishna? Is that
what do you mean by causeless dependence?
Like, now I depend on Krishna for a cause, saying I need a solution to this Krishna. Although I know my final goal is I have to go back, I want to go back to Goloka Vrindavan, but now I'm caught up in this world where I have 10,000 things to do and 10,000 problems.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
Sometimes, yeah. Instead of thinking, oh Krishna, I need this and this and this and this, just say, Krishna, is there anything I can do to serve you?
It's mixed. It's not pure. Just Krishna, I want to serve you. It's always mixed with. I also have this, by the way. Or can you help me? Not help me here. I mean, obviously, you tend to follow Krishna, but in the back of your mind, you always think, I hope it works out okay. So if I be true to myself, I would say I would like everything to work out in a way that I want it to be.
Well, you're not alone. You're not alone. That's what everyone is thinking in the material world. But do you think everyone's stocks can go up? Do you think it just... This is... My dear boy, life is difficult. This is the material world. That you can't have everything go your way.
That's why the goal to be have... dependence on Krishna where there is no cause, where you...
First, we want to turn our life into His service. And depend on Him for the results. That's what we want to do.
Yeah. Always come to a point where I think that to do that I'll have to leave whatever I am currently doing.
But therefore you do this under guidance.
Yes.
So no one's telling you that you have to... Has anyone ever told you that you have to like leave everything? And
No one. It's just my own.
Okay, so stop your own from doing what it's doing. Instead, take some guidance and act according to the guidance so that... Ideally, someone perfectly, and there are people who are this pious who have been through these things in previous lives, they go very, very straight. Some of us have to go like this, and some of us have to go like this, and some of us have to go like this, and some of us have to go like this. But we just shouldn't go like this in the opposite direction. So we need guidance according to who we are and what our situation is. And so who will teach us to neglect the mind, who's acting in an extreme way, telling us things inaccurately just to frighten us, and instead take guidance not from the mind, but from devotees who you trust, who are going to give you guidance that will, who know you and can give you guidance according to who you are, so that you get there in a suitable way, according to who you are. It's like every mother wants every child to be brilliant in school, but the teachers don't expect that. Rather, they guide the children so that they're improving. And that's the teacher's definition of whether a student is doing well or not, whether they're improving. So, I don't know if I answered your question or not.
Yeah, kind of.
Kind of. So, but what you need to do, obviously, is learn how to use who you are, what you are, your situation. So it's as pleasing to Krishna as possible. The Bhagavad Gita teaches this. You do your duty, but in such a way that it's pleasing to Krishna. So there are many aspects of your duty that will make your duty pleasing to Krishna. It may not be the same pleasing as the residents of Vrindavan are giving to Krishna, but okay, I'm not on that level. So let me do what I can and not worry about what I can't do so much. What do you think?
Basically, life is too short in terms of
You have a very ideal. You'd like to be ideal, but and then you find yourself you can't be ideal, right? So you have to become humble instead. So I say I'm not on this level at this point. It doesn't feel good, but humility is something that we have to taste many times, and it never tastes good. But life teaches us humility. So we have material desires, and we have a material situation and material entanglement. So how to use those so that they bring us closer to Krishna, to live a life harmonious with our chief desire, a balanced life in harmony with our desire to become purified and love Krishna and in such a way that acknowledges the fact that life is short and that it doesn't, we want to get as far as we can in this life. What do you think?
It's hard.
My dear boy, no one said it's going to be easy, except in our dream, when we're kids, little kids. But I also feel the same way. But you also said right in the beginning, unless it's hard and difficult, you don't turn to Krishna. So we can't complain on both sides. I do think that it's not easy to meet one's fate in life. We each have different fates, different karma. It's not easy to meet one's fate in life. Everyone has to be strong. By good association, that really helps. And if we don't hear Shastra, it will never happen. And if we don't chant good rounds, it will never happen. Because the first part that makes it difficult is we think we don't deserve it. We deserve everything happening. There's money. We just hold out a big pot of money, a pot, and it just fills with money. And our kids all grow immediately up to be beautiful and exactly the dream children that we were imagining they were supposed to be. And we would never get sick and everything like that. And our parents, depending if we have a good relationship with a bad one, or a bad one, they live forever, or they don't live very long, or But it doesn't happen like that. And then we think, you know, why? I'm imagining it's going to be perfect. It should be perfect. Why? What's wrong with this world? That's called illusion. The imagination that I'm in the center of everything and the whole universe should organize itself to fulfill my desires. Every conditioned soul is thinking like that. And therefore it's so much suffering. Frustration and suffering. But in human life, just imagine what it's like for an animal, for a bird. You know, there were cats out there stalking today. Or one cat. You know, you're there just doing your bird business or something, whatever birds do, looking for worms or whatever. And this cat just has its eye on you. And that's why birds are always going. And they never stay in one place for a long time. It's too dangerous. This is the world. And we're in this situation because of our particular mixtures of piety and impiety. So no one's innocent in this world. This is a prison. So bad things don't happen to good people. But even in the material world is such a place that even Krishna's own mother and father were put in prison. When Kamsa, and chained up with shackles, takes some balancing. But I think if you look at your life, you'll see that Krishna, in fact, is taking care of you.
Indeed.
So? But not according to the way you miss certain things.
Well, not according to the material things, but also.
But materially, spiritually, both is taking care of you.
Yes.
But maybe not in the. So.
In terms of my part, I was taking, not in terms of Krishna, but me.
Okay. What's your part?
My part is to do as much spiritually. Listen more about Krishna, spend time learning about Krishna, considering that life is short, I'm doing more other things then.
Okay, so keep the balance. So do as much as you can. Don't waste time.
If you're doing it well, you can be a good example to other people that are coming along too. They can see that you're sorting your life out pretty well.
And probably would.
We should try
and help others. Because otherwise, if we're just absorbed in our self, of course, when you're married and have children, there's no question of being absorbed in your own self. No one, because especially when you have children, because the children are so absorbed in themselves, they don't at all let you become absorbed. Because it's so ironic, you know, you get married because you want someone to serve you, and then you have the children, so you want to enjoy the children, but it just all turns the opposite, that you have to serve everyone. Because we're servants. So the most important question that you should ask, I have a little, three questions. One is, who am I? And the second is, the answer is, I'm a servant. And the second question is, well, if I'm a servant, who's my master? So that question you have to be able to answer. And then the third question is, what's my service?